Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Good evening, everyone. This is host Terry Lynn Coop, and tonight on the Blue Plate Special, we have writer and illustrator Jason Tudor. Jason served in the military, where he was a multi-award-winning combat correspondent, photographer, and illustrator, including three deployments in wartime. His current project is as creator, writer, artist, colorer, letterer, dishwasher, paperboy, you name it, of the independent comic book Vorpal. And previously, you might have heard him on the Sci-Fi Show, and he was also editor-in-chief for a charitable military science fiction anthology called Battle Space, which I had the privilege of being part of. Right now, he calls Augusta, Georgia his home, and when he's not serving veterans in his day job with the federal government, he plays guitar, Xbox One, you can find him as Vorpal Warrior 88, and golfs when his knee says it's okay to do so. Good evening, Jason. How you doing?
Hi, Terry. How are you? My knees are not saying it's good to do so, by the way, lately, so I haven't golfed much.
Well, it's also been cold as hell. How has it been in Georgia?
Yeah. It's been cold. It warmed up the past week, but it's supposed to get real cold again. I understand it's snowing just about everywhere right now, so we're looking forward to some more cold weather. Or not looking forward, but it's coming.
It was pretty in Kansas today because it was clear and calm, but it was cold as all get out. So that's what I'm shipping you so far.
Well, that's
and
Kansas.
And you have seen weather in a few parts of the world, haven't you, sir?
I'll tell you what. Probably the coldest I've ever been is Plattsburgh, New York. When it gets down, when it gets down below minus 10, there probably isn't a difference, but I noticed it. And that's the coldest I've ever been is about minus 20 in Plattsburgh. I've been to Iceland, been to Norway. Plattsburgh, New York holds the all-time record there for me. Crazy.
With me, it was Minneapolis, and I was out on a job site, and the thermometer was frozen at 25 below.
I want to save a guy's life in Minneapolis.
Well, that was before the wind started blowing, so I totally understand.
Geez.
But you got to quite a bit of the world on Uncle Sam Airlines, didn't you?
I had an incredible career. I was fortunate to be able to work for something called Airman Magazine in the U.S. Air Force for about 2 years. And I was able to travel to so many countries, Norway, Iceland, Germany. And then in my civilian career, after I retired from the military, I got to live in Europe for 5.5 years. So we went just about everywhere. I lived on Midway Island as a kid, and I also lived in Hawaii for a bit. So, I've been fortunate. You create many of your opportunities, but some of those come by serendipity, too. So I'm always thankful for that.
And I remember reading something you'd posted about being part of a project to recover remains of KIAs.
That was one of my literally one of my most emotional times in the military. I was covering something called Joint Task Force Full Accounting. And those are groups of military people who go back to Vietnam and Cambodia and Laos to look for remains of those missing in action, of which there are still about, I'm going to say 1,500 to 1,600. I don't have the precise number. It was about 1,900 when I went on this trip. And it's literally like 90 to 95 young enlisted, a few officers, and they go out and they scavenge the jungles and the grounds looking for dog tags or anything. And when I went on my trip, they found remains of two soldiers. I'm using soldiers generically. And there's an amazing ceremony that happens on the ramp at Hanoi with the ambassador and the leading general for that. And they put the remains on the airplane and then they fly back to Guam and then they fly back to Hawaii, where Hawaii has a lab where they're identified. So that whole process was 53,400 and some odd miles. And again, it was just one of the most emotional moments I had in my life because my dad is a Vietnam veteran and I know so many Vietnam veterans. And it really meant a lot to me to do that.
And I thank you because my brother was a Vietnam veteran. He was in the Navy and served one hitch over in basically shuttling Marine amphib units between the Philippines and Vietnam. So thank you for that. And how is that? Now we're gonna start talking about comics. Tell us a little bit about your comic Vorpal. What is Vorpal?
Vorpal is the makeup of a dream. Vorpal kind of got started in 2009 as a vision that I had, and it's literally the first opening page of the first book, which is of a woman with a large assassin's rifle standing on the edge of a floating city, looking at another floating city ready to make a kill. And for some reason, that image resonated to me tremendously. And I thought, there's something there. At the time, I was working on a script for a comic book artist in Australia named Daniel Picciotto. He's brilliant. He's going to be big at wherever he decides to work. And I just arrived in Germany. And I was sort of torn between what Dan was doing and what I was doing. And also there were some other issues going on medically and some other things. So eventually I had to give up Dan's project and let someone else take that over. But I did get to come back to Vorpal, and I started to put all these sort of images together. And what came out was this little assassin with a giant rifle and this sort of interesting background that she has, that she's having these visions and she doesn't know where they're coming from. So it really was just born of, a dream. And a dream that persisted with me. And then I had a lot of opportunity to mull over this world that she lives in. And I just started saying, there's something here, there's something here. And if you tag that on to the fact that I'm sort of a frustrated comic book artist, when I've been wanting to be a comic book artist since I was 14, but didn't do such a great job of practicing and doing it. With the comic book, I was able to kind of meld, writing, which I'm all right at, and the art, and to do some other things. And that came of Vorpal. Of course, we know Vorpal is a C.S. Lewis word, I believe, from Alice in Wonderland, I think. And it means nothing, the Vorpal sword and all that. But I thought it was a good name for an assassin.
That's it. It's also in Jabberwock.
Jabberwock, that's what I'm thinking of, yeah. It's the cold, Harry. It's killing me.
it's okay.
I thought that was the perfect name for an assassin, and that's kind of how it got rolling.
And what is the Holy Order of the Long Rifle? I love that.
So we're going to do more about this, and I'm hoping my friend Dan Bethel will be able to illustrate the particular flashback that's associated with. But the whole idea of the Holy Order is they are the sort of gatekeepers to power and for the powerful. So they sort of are the checks and balances to people that the powerful think are getting in the way of their money. I mean, they're not an upright sort of unit, but they evolved from cattle ranchers and cattle thieves of the Old West. And guys who would guard the pens of cattle and all those things. And that really evolved from, I'm kind of corny, but it really evolved from the movie Tom Horn with Steve McQueen. And that always stuck with me, the imagery of that movie and how that movie went about its business and that character Tom Horn. And when I started doing Vorpal, I thought, well, she's a little assassin with a big giant rifle, and something connected with me there. I said, well, she needs to belong to some kind of an order, because that will give it a little weight. And thus came the Holy Order of the long rifle being from, the Tom Horn sort of rifles and Remington and all that. And the sort of secret society that's evolved from then to where she is now as the sort of garter, keepers of the aristocracy and all that, and doing their dirty work.
No, I love the movie Tom Horn. Now, my immediate first thought was it's got an arc like a rainbow.
An arc like a rainbow. That's right.
Well, your comics are just, your layout and everything, they're just absolutely beautiful. And I see on here too that you use a lot of different ways of laying pages out, different size and different shaped panels, overlapping panels, that sort of thing. Who are some of your comic influencers, your heroes?
I've been fortunate in that although I haven't grown into the comic book community the way I wanted to as a young man, I have made many friends in the comic book community. So not many, but a few who I call close friends, and I'm always thankful for their input. I would say early on my influences were John Byrne, Timothy Truman. Howard Chaykin was a big influence, especially on the layout side. He's pretty amazing. He also writes and draws his own stuff. Neil Adams comes to mind. Bernie Wrightson, of course. I mean, I could go on and on. Bill Sienkiewicz was a big influence of mine. He's a guy that I follow religiously on Instagram and on and on. And a lot of that design also, because I was a military journalist, we had to build our own newspapers at the bases we are. So we had to be skilled in sort of layout and design and modular and all that and how things flow. So laying out a comic book page to me just became sort of a natural thing. I don't always get it right, but I do like my designs. On one or two, I kind of look back and go, why did I do that? But I think in the second book, I really nailed some things that I wanted to nail, and I'm pretty happy with it. So that group of artists and some others, you know, I was a big Salvador Dali disciple. I was a big Mondrian disciple. I was a big Jackson Pollock disciple. So all of those elements are what goes into that part of the book.
So what comes first, art or story?
Yes.
Next question.
You know,
no.
Carrie, it really depends. I have the first four issues scripted out. That's what's supposed to be the first trade. So the first two issues, as you know, are done. And these issues for 3 and 4 are done. I'm probably going to get started on those next week, which actually the first few pages start with some watercolors. But what I found with issue 2, as I think we all do as writers, is we sort of get to a juncture and our characters say, we're not going to do what you wrote down. We need to do this. And as I was writing number 2, I discovered that I'm going to need to do something different. And although I wrote some stuff and that was used, I also found that I drew some stuff. And I put some stuff on paper and I said, I need to use this somewhere. This is good stuff and it relates. So sometimes you go the Marvel method, I believe it's called, where you draw it first and then you put words on the page. And sometimes you have a pretty good piece of writing and you go, that's what I want to do. And I think there are probably more than a handful of examples in issue number 2 where that's true. And there's probably 3 or 4 in issue number 1 where the drawing came before the writing. You know, for instance, on issue 1, which is about a year old now, excuse me, I get this darn cold. There's a page where she essentially falls. She drops from the city. She leaps for her own life. You know, she makes a leap of faith, for lack of a better term, which is, you know, sort of the allegory there. And she just falls and she just continues to fall because there's nothing coming. And that came to me before the words did, or that came to me before I just knew that she was going to do this. And I didn't really have any words to put there. And I didn't think there would be, but there came a couple. So it just depends. And I think a lot of when you have a comic book team, I think that when that team does that, there's sort of an amalgamation of, well, let's do these words, but I have this, maybe you could use this. But for me, it's a little bit of both because I'm in both worlds all the time with this.
Well, and you had talked about having them, because I'm looking at issue number 2 right now, about having, and I think I found the pages you were talking about when you were talking about some influence by Patrick Nagel.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was the influences. I mean, I wrote a blog about that this week. Influence is an easy word, impactful, crushingly so. Patrick Nagel was such an amazing force in the 90s, and it wasn't even, that was actually a purposeful tribute to him to do that page. And actually, Terry, if I can be really candid, that was the last page I did because I was so afraid of screwing it up. Now, my professional friends, they're like, yeah, good try, and I totally agree with that, but I'm really pleased with the way the page came out. It suits the sort of montage of visions that she's been having, and it really will tie in to some later news that pops up in issues 3 or 4, some things that happen. So Nagel, a big influence there as well, and that page is a very specific tribute to him there.
Well, I think you did a very good job. I liked it, and I recognized it immediately as I was flipping through the pages. And now you had a guest artist in this particular issue too, didn't you?
I had to call her agent. I had to figure out what the fees were going to be. I had to negotiate a calm working space. But yes, in the end, my 12-year-old daughter did end up drawing actually 2 pages of Vorpal, and that time to came to me on a whim. And that goes back to what we talked about earlier of sometimes your characters say, I'm going to do this. And when that required me to basically write and script a whole 8 new pages, the comic was 24, bumped up to 32. Part of that was I needed another vision. And so my daughter is a prolific artist. She draws her own comics at night. She's got stacks and stacks and stacks of mini comic books that someday we're going to put online and people are going to buy. But I said, hey, do you want to draw these two pages? She said, as 12-year-olds do, yeah, all right. So I gave her the script for the two pages. I said, here's some professional comic book paper. You go back, draw these, and come back and see me. So she goes back, and like 2 days later, she says, okay, done. That's literally what it was. And I'm looking at these pages. I'm like, these are fantastic. I mean, these are fantastic. And they were great. And they only – so when I inked them and colored them, but she did the pencils because the inking is all done digitally. She just doesn't know how to use the software. And I changed almost none of that, to exception of some of the panels didn't quite fit the frame size. So we just adjusted those. But for the most part, everything that she did is on that page, and I love it. It's just wonderful.
How has the experience been of sharing your writing and your art with your daughter?
I think from the outset, Terry, I have always wanted this to be. I wanted to do this with someone, and we talked about Keith, but Keith was a part of this. We've since separated our partnership. He's moving on to do some other projects, and I'm moving forward with some other projects. Very amicable, no issues there. But I'm very much about collaboration. I enjoy collaboration immensely. I think it's the McCartney Lennon sort of situation, or you know, when you have two heads in a room or three heads in a room, you tend to get a lot more done. You tend to get different aspects and different focus, and so. Yeah, with Keith or with Annabelle, it's always just about seeing what they can do and what they bring. And I'm always flattered when people will come in and do that and work with me as a team. But working with Annabelle was just a real pleasure. And she sort of just aw shucks is it, you know. And I showed her the printed issue this week, and she's like, oh, that's cool. And then she went back to her room and played Sim 6 for a while, or Civ 6 for a while. So, I enjoy collaboration immensely. I think it's I enjoy my solo work as well, but I enjoy collaboration immensely. And it's when you find the right chemistry to do that, it's really humbling.
Well, and do you find that some of that comes out of your long career in the military and in military journalism? Because aren't most projects collaborative?
I think it's interesting you say that. I think everything is collaborative, you know, to be fair. I hear a lot of folks in life say, well, I did that myself. But, you know, I think what they mean is there were a lot of people who helped them along the way to help get them to where they are, you know, teachers and doctors and all sorts of folks who sort of helped them to get to where they are. You know, somebody's got to put the paperwork in for you to go to college. Somebody's got to do X, Y, and Z. And sometimes you need a loan and other things. I think the military, I was a pretty unfocused 17-year-old kid. And I needed some structure. And I think what the military does do immensely, and I can never repay, is it gives you an incredible amount of structure, and it teaches you time management. But it also shows you the incredible value of camaraderie and what that can do for getting the job done. You know, as many of the military say, you know, you trust the person next to you with your life, and you trust the person to be able to be there for you and to get jobs done. And I think that carries on with a lot of military people when they get out of the service too, in that, you know, they bring that with them. Hey, I'm going to do this job 100%, and here's how I'm going to do it. So I think a bit of that comes from the military, but I think it's also inborn in a lot of folks too, through their families or whatever it might be. For me, it just happened to be born in the military, and I'm more humbled every day that I managed to serve 21 years and take that time to, now I'm sort of paying that forward to some things.
And do you find that your military experience pushes over into your attitude towards storytelling and writing? How do you draw on your experiences?
That's a great question. I do, and I think it's both a detriment and I think it's both a compliment. The detriment is when you're writing news, features, sports, for the military, especially, you know, you're taught at the Defense Information School, you're taught essential journalism: who, what, where, when, why, how. It's bare bones. It's inverted pyramid. It's, you know, give me what I need, and I can stop reading three paragraphs later, and I don't need to read anymore because you've given me the crux of the story. The challenge with that is when you start to think, I'm going to write a fiction novel about a guy who is X, Y, and Z, you can write a fiction novel and suddenly have it be like, you know, 11,000 words long, and you go, well, that's a novel. And some people go, that's barely a novella. And because you're sitting there saying, because you've done this bare bones work in the military to try to get the story out. Now, feature writing's a little different, but I think it still has that sort of, you know, give me what I need versus sort of give me other things I want as part of the prose. So I think to that extent, it's a detriment. As it is a compliment, and it's helpful, is again, you go back to that structure. And the fact that in the military, every day, I wrote, I think I counted at some point, I did probably close to 5,000 stories, either writing or rewriting stories. You edit a lot of your own stuff. You're editing other people's stuff, and you're laying out and designing that stuff. So it's a constant mill of creativity. And a lot of journalists now, mostly fertile journalists, will say, you know, that they are creative souls and they have to have some input there. So there is that opportunity to create and build. And that does carry over when you get into this, is because now you can apply those particular techniques and things to what you're doing. It just, I think, you know, when you have a, if you can get a bit more education or get those other components that you need to sort of build on that, that's what's very helpful. So I think the military career, it was amazingly helpful. I'm not sure how specifically it helped my writing, other than to say I probably could benefit from, you know, a bit more meat on the bones style fiction classes, because, you know, military, again, military journalism is who, what, where, when, how, and why and how. And that's pretty structured.
And do you find it sparked your imagination because you have seen and written about and experienced some amazing things?
I think, you know, I was 7 years old when Star Wars came out, May 25th, 1977. I think that kind of started the imagination push. I mean, you push through and you see things like Blade Runner and you go on and on and on. I grew up in a military family. I think what the military does to what you're talking about in terms of sparking imagination, especially if you're in a military family that moves a lot, is as a military person, you're going to move probably every 3 or 4 years. And for instance, I went from New York to Colorado in the military, New York to Colorado to Florida to Texas, where I fought cancer for like 5 years. Then I went to the Portugal, and then I came back to Georgia, and that pretty much ended my military career. But in each of those stops, you take something from that, right? You take your environment, you take your culture, you learn something from those things. And then when I had the chance to travel Europe from like 2009 to 2014, you know, now you're exposed to such amazing culture in Slovenia, Slovakia, Estonia, Norway, Sweden, and all these other different places that are just totally 100% different than what you're used to. And I think that goes in the power of world building and creating, when you start to create your own fiction and science fiction, how you can port some of that stuff over to make your fiction more rich and to make it more vibrant and to make that language come alive. So there's definitely something there that helps enhance it. The experiences themselves too. How can I take this experience of X and maybe turn it into a Y or a Z, a mystery thriller or a science fiction? How do I take that and take that putty and now sculpt it into what I want? So yes, I agree. There's definitely something that's there. And through 21 years, it's definitely been helpful.
So in Vorpal, you've pretty much been chief cook and bottle washer as far as the artwork, the creation, layout, coloring, yes, story, everything, correct?
Badly coloring, yes. Drawing adequate. Story, I'm pretty happy with. So pretty much. I mean, Keith did provide some great input that got a few pages done, and he did some great quality checks. So I wouldn't put that aside at all. But for the most part, yeah, it has been mostly me. So for what it's worth.
Oh, I think you've got some beautifully colored pages, especially the splash pages.
They're well, we could talk about that maybe in a whole nother podcast, being colorblind and sucking at coloring. But I mean, thank you. That's very nice of you to say.
Well, and I can definitely see where you mentioned some things like Blade Runner, et cetera. I can see the influences in some of your, like there's this beautiful splash page where Vorpal's, they're overlooking the city where Vorpal's apartment is.
Yes.
That's extremely Blade Runner.
Yeah, definitely. I always like to tell people Vorpal is Fifth Element meets Matrix meets Ultraviolet, and has a heavy Aeon Flux element to it as well. I mean, I think it's an amalgamation of those things. And I mean, I'm still sort of rolling along to get through a lot of all of these elements that I want to get in. But I think those three things are kind of the elevator pitch, you know, to get your script greenlighted. You know, Matrix, Fifth Element, and Ultraviolet with Aeon, probably Aeon Flux more than Ultraviolet, actually. And I would agree with you. Those are definitely close choices.
Oh, I love Aeon Flux. I love that. I absolutely love that movie.
So amazing.
So what's up next for Vorpal?
Vorpal's going to sit for probably another week, and then I'll press on to issue 3, though I'm still even at this time contemplating going out and hoping to find an artist and a colorist. I thought about it. The challenge is I'm just not sure if I have the opportunity to do a good Kickstarter or not and get folks interested in that. Colorists, and I mean, I want to pay the artists well. They do great work, and I want to make sure they get paid the right per page rate and things like that. The other challenge of that, of course, is, you know, I have to I have a budget and a family and a home and all those kinds of things. And as much as I want to finish telling the story, the practicality and economics of it are that I may have to do it. And, you know, this is, you know, at my age, a hobby at this point. You know, I could still, on the writing part, I would love to still break in and do something for Marvel or DC or any of the comic companies. I would love to be a part of that. I'd love to write Moon Knight someday. And Moon Knight is just unbelievably refreshing and wonderful to me. And I always grew up on a lot of Moon Knight for Marvel. I'd love to write Moon Knight someday. But sometimes, as I've said before to folks, a lot of this for me is done out of necessity. And, you know, again, if I could find a penciler and an inker and a colorist who would come in at a decent rate and, you know, let me put them on layaway or at least make payments, I think I could probably do something, you know, really kind of broaden Vorpal's scope. What I would say is, it's going to wait about a week, and then I've got the first 8 pages already starting to pencil those in, kind of get those done, and then press on. I've got some other projects I'm really looking forward to getting to as well. So Vorpal may take a breather while we do some issue 2 marketing and sales and that sort of thing with my new publisher, Crazy Monkey Inc., who those guys are great, and then we'll see what happens.
And where can people find Vorpal?
So Vorpal can be found at crazymonkeyinc.com. That's normal spelling of crazy, normal spelling of monkey, and ink like you draw on a page, ink.com. You can find it on my website at jasontutor.com in the shop. And I have signed copies that I'm selling for a bit. The PDF and the Kindle of number 1 are right now are free. The Kindle version of number 2 is $1.49. And unfortunately, the distributor that we have for the comic has not posted the comic yet. So the main source of really buying and getting the comic is not available yet. And that's got me a little disheartened, but we move on. So that's where we're doing right now.
It happens, but definitely. And I will tell anybody who's listening, don't fear getting the PDF version. It's beautiful. It's vibrant. It looks fabulous on your computer screen. It's easy to go from page to page. You're not going to get any of those weird formatting glitches that you occasionally get with PDF documents. So if you're interested in taking a look at Vorpal, don't hesitate to grab it in PDF while you're waiting for the print copies to catch up. So you intimated at some other projects. Tell me.
I'm excited. I need to get back into writing, and I told myself headlong once I finished issue 2 that I needed to get back into selling writing. And you know, when you worked with us on Battle Space, I think that was 2009, 2010. That was the last sort of short story / novel writing that I've been doing. And since then I've tabled everything because of the comic book. And as you know, it's coloring and inking and penciling and all that. So it's a labor that has to be focused on. But now I'm really, really excited to get started on a new set of mystery novels that are very much fashioned in a Mike Hammer sort of fashion. They're going to be based on a detective who's based in San Diego, which is my hometown. So I know it and I can write about it. And I've just got some really fun and interesting ideas about how to bring this guy to life. I'm going to need some help, Terry. So, you know, I'm going to be calling you because I haven't written mystery in a while. I've got a tabled mystery on the shelf, but it's been a while. My plot chops a little, but I'm very excited to get that off the shelf. And then the other project that's actually been working simultaneously with issue 2 is a series of short stories that are based in the Vorpal 9 Systems universe. And I really like all 4 Ooh. Of them. I think they're really wonderful. And I think they're very different from the comic book, although they're based in that same universe. So probably going to push that out in another month or two, make it available for a pretty nominal price, but it definitely does link onto Vorpal. And then I've got 3 books that are sitting right, just collecting dust. I need to, because I can, you know, we write write drunk, edit sober, right? Well, now I've got to get sober and start editing, which is one of my least favorite parts, but, you know, got to do it, got to push through and do it. So I want to get those out and start querying those and query some short stories and some other things. So I definitely want to get back into the writing aspect of it very much.
That's interesting about the Vorpal short stories. That sounds fascinating.
I think, you know, I and you were on Facebook when I talked about this, but one of my favorite short stories is I think it's the longest one, has to do with making chocolate. And I got into this idea of, you know, how valuable chocolate is to the world and you know, how it was used as a commodity in some cultures and on and on and on. And it really sort of stoked my idea for the story I'm writing. So I'm looking forward to getting that into the book and edited and out there, because I really enjoy it. And I've got one and a half stories and I'm still polishing up and finishing, but I think it's going to be a fun little collection.
Well, if anyone
does appear in
one
story, by the way, Vorpal is in one of the stories. So.
Excellent. If anyone out there was interested in talking to you about possibly collaborating on the comics, where can they find you?
Of course, I'm on Twitter at Jason Tudor. That's probably the fastest place. Just my first and last name. Email is, of course, always good. info@jasontutor.com. On my Facebook page, of course, which is /JasonTudorWrites. I have all the social medias. I think I've had them all since like 2006. So I'm pretty easy to find. I would love to collaborate with somebody just to bang heads and see if maybe this is a direction they'd love to go and see what kind of rate they want to get paid. I'd really like to see this thing move forward as a collaboration again. And that would give me a little more time to focus on the writing and focus on some other writing as well. But, you know, of course, we're going to pay those folks as well. But I'd be excited to do that, of course. And thanks for the opportunity to do that.
And your handle that you're doing all this under, is that Atomic Bazooka Studios?
Yeah, that's kind of my de facto little studio name, as I'm trying to collect receipts and all this new software that I buy, and so I can make it into a tax write-off. So Atomic Bazooka is kind of the de facto name for not only my stuff, but my daughter published a book about a year and a half ago, so we put that under there. She's got a sequel that we're getting ready to push out, and then we've got some photography and some other things. So it all kind of falls under there again, just so we can you know, keep it under one umbrella.
Well, it sounds like you've got quite a busy year coming up.
I hope so. I mean, I really, again, Terry, it's been an absolute privilege and a great opportunity to speak to you here. I'm really looking forward to 2018 being one of those years where I can sort of, you know, bear down and really I want to get a lot of rejections this year, Terry. I mean, that's kind of my goal. I want rejections to line my walls. And in there somewhere, I hope to get a couple of acceptances too. But I mean, I really want to just sort of Icarus my way back into writing and see what happens. And I'm looking forward to doing that. I really am. It's been something I've missed. I'm still going to work very good on Vorpal, but I mean, that is one of my goals.
Well, you need to get the big nail that Stephen King had that he would impale all of his rejections on.
Absolutely. Yeah. I forgot about that. That's right.
When he'd talk about the rejections, these were back when they were actually mailed to you. He'd say that first they were just mimeographed with no signature, and then they were mimeographed with a real signature. Then they had a note. Then they had coffee stains on them, which meant they laid on the editor's desk for a while. And he was able to track his own evolution up until he started getting acceptances. So here's just some coffee stained rejections.
Yeah. You know, I mentioned a book to you, that mystery about the baseball security guy, Breaking Enigma, and I queried that one. And I actually got the coffee stain letter back, and I was freaked out. I was like, wow, somebody actually read it. And they wrote like a page and a half of notes. They said, you know, Purple Pros and some other things, but there's something here. You should continue to work on it. And one of my friends, Rhonda Stapleton, I don't know her new last name. Sorry, Rhonda. She had done some editing for me on that before I sent it out to querying, and she was a big part of making sure that but I mean, it was an absolute thrill to get, like you said, you know, thank you for, what's really the first step is nothing, and then the second step is thank you, but no. But it was much more than a thank you, but no, and that thrilled me immensely because I thought, okay, I'm on the right track here. The problem is the track has been very curvy, and with health and moves and everything else, it's been challenging. But I hate excuses as much as anybody, and I think 2018 is definitely going to be the year of no excuses for writing.
Well, one thing I can tell you already, because I've had several friends who've transitioned over from journalistic content style to literary style, is burning your AP style book.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one, but you'll do it.
I've done that more, I think, lately, especially with just certain things, because, you know, when you've had AP style book as a part of your brain for 21 years, I mean, you can't walk anywhere without going, oh, that should be capitalized. Oh, that should be down. That should be the number 9 instead of written out 9. And, oh, that should be, that's a dateline. That doesn't need the state after it. You know, that's just, you know, that's an involuntary muscle. So I'm definitely working toward that right now. And I think I've done a pretty good job of it over about the last year.
Well, no, this is great. And I already know that we are going to be talking more in the future as you get more of these, as you get more of these projects going on. So just to kind of summarize it up, folks, really the best place, kind of your all Jason, all the time channel to be able to contact him about possibility of collaborating or just to geek out and talk comics or to get a copy of Vorpal or to find out where you can get a print copy is probably going to be his website, which is Jason Tudor, and that's TUDOR.com. So check him out there. Check him out on Facebook. We've been friends for years. I can tell you, you won't be sorry you did. And other than that, I will, at this point, I'll say that's our show tonight. I've got a little bit of boilerplate I have to announce, but it's been great talking to you, and I guarantee this is not the last time.
Terry, thank you so much for having me on. It's been a real privilege. Thanks so much.
Absolutely, and I'll be talking to you, bro. Well, right now, tonight's Blue Plate special was brought to you by the anthology Betrayed, which is a series of kick-ass stories of crime survivors. And I'm very proud to have a story, actually the lead-off story, Legal Aid, in there. So check it out. All of the benefits go to benefit the Survivors of Domestic Violence programs. And this broadcast is owned and copyrighted by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. You can follow the Blue Plate Special on Facebook to stay up to date and see who is coming up on the menu. And with that, I'll say goodnight, everyone. Thank you.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.